for a presentation. Please do not call me.
We continue now with your calls to Dreamland with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nine.
We do, and this just in. We're just getting word that there has been a 7.5 earthquake in New Zealand. Says my faxer, John. Wow, 7.5 earthquake in New Zealand. Yikes, just in. And I believe that that is an accurate report. I've got it from one other source, though not yet from the networks. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. We'll get back to Sean, David Morton. More predictions, more questions, many of them coming in, which we'll get to in just a moment, by fax. Time to learn the truth. 7. I'm back now to Sean. And Sean, we've got affiliates in Alaska and Hawaii. And here's a fax from John, who wants to know, how about some predictions for the states of Alaska and Hawaii from your guest? All we hear about are predictions for the continental U.S.
Well, in my newsletter, I might also say that so many of your listeners have called in and subscribed from Alaska and Hawaii. Very specifically, just in the last couple of newsletters, I ran a number of predictions of the return of Hawaii to a substantial sovereign kingdom. One of the individuals that I know of who is actually in a federal penitentiary in Florence, Colorado, is King Kamehameha IV, who is the rightful heir to the Hawaiian throne. And he's actually under, he had a dispute with the government claiming that because he was, in fact, a sovereign in Hawaii, that he did not owe federal income tax because he was a sovereign under treaty to the government. And the federal government decided to basically put him under lock and key because the sovereign movement in Hawaii was growing by leaps and bounds. One of the major problems that Hawaii specifically is going to have is going to be the fact that hurricanes are going to increase dramatically in size and speed. This is going to be due primarily to a flux in the hyperbaric pressure on Earth. And a lot of this has had to do with Shoemaker-Levy 9, the comet actually striking Jupiter. Now, even though the radiation effects of that comet, in other words, these waves of radiation that are coming off Jupiter after the effects of the comet, are going to take at least another 6.5 to almost 7 years to reach planet Earth, the gravitational effects of the solar system were felt virtually right away. And what Hawaii and specifically Florida have to worry about in the next year, and specifically later on this year, are going to be hurricanes where the average hurricane is going to have speeds of 150 to almost 175 miles per hour. They're not even going to be called hurricanes anymore. I coined the term hypercanes a while back because I felt that these hurricanes were going to be so massive that they were going to take out large chunks of American cities, specifically mostly in Florida, but also in Hawaii as well.
Why are hurricanes getting stronger?
It has to do with an increase in the hyperbaric pressure, because the hyperbaric pressure has fluxed, I believe, as a direct result of the Shoemaker-Levy 9 comet actually striking Jupiter.
Well, I don't know what hyperbaric pressure is. I know there have been scientists, Sean, that have theorized that we're warming up, the planet is warming up. And, of course, as the planet gets warmer, there's more energy available for hurricanes to build.
Yes.
And so I've heard that, but I'm not familiar with hyperbaric pressure.
Well, that has to do with not only the global warming aspect, but it's the best way I can describe it is quite literally, there's almost a, with the assault of this comet on Jupiter, there has been a flux rather substantially in the gravitational field of the entire solar system. And I believe that this is one of the things that is going to lead to these massive hurricanes. Now, as far as the scientific explanation, I'm at a bit of a loss. All I can tell you is that these hurricanes are going to get bigger and larger and much nastier, and the average hurricane is going to be about the size of Hurricane Hugo. Gone are going to be the days where we'll have hurricanes of 50, 75, 80 miles per hour. As I said, on the average worldwide, we'll have hurricanes of between 150 and 200 miles per hour.
All right, I'm
getting Florida and Hawaii.
All right, I don't want to leave Alaska out. They've had one large earthquake, as you know.
Well, Alaska's not in too horribly much danger, simply because the massive Alaskan earthquake in the early part of the 1960s, when they had, I believe, it was like the 8.5 up there, has rearranged a lot of the landmass in Alaska to the point of where, you know, Alaska is always going to be active. It's always going to be active because of the volcanic activity there. You're going to see hurricanes and, well, I'm sorry, volcanoes and earthquakes increase all around the Pacific Rim, increasing exponentially, I believe, once again in the next 5 years. As far as most of Alaska goes, you have to remember that the majority of people live specifically on the coast. Mm-hmm. They are going to have some major readjustments of the tectonic platelets. They will experience probably a quake as high as a 7 to a 7.4 or so, I believe, within about the next 2 years. But remember, Alaska's been pretty well rearranged. There's been a number of very, very strong quakes in Alaska that have rearranged the tectonic platelets up there. So I don't think Alaska has a huge amount to worry about.
What? All right, all right. From DJ in Phoenix, ask your guest, please, what he sees in the way of the status of the food supply, disease, epidemics, and nuclear detonation in the next 6 or 7 years.
Well, let me tell you that this year is going to be very much about volcanic eruptions, and it's going to be very much about atomic accidents, nuclear supplies going... nuclear reactors that have been built improperly, and also stored nuclear devices. One of the things that I do see is that I saw, and I think I wrote this in the, it was one of the things that I wrote to you in the facts earlier, is that the I saw problems with atomic radiation in Texas, specifically the northern central parts of Texas. I also saw problems with Albuquerque at Kirtland Air Force Base with a large number of nuclear devices that are being stored at Kirtland Air Force Base right outside of Albuquerque. You have something interesting astrologically happening this year as well. You have Pluto moving out of Scorpio, but Pluto moves back into, and Pluto is very specifically the planet of volcanoes, assassinations, atomic energy, atomic explosions. And it's in the sign that it rules, Scorpio. Now, it's just moved out of Sagittarius, which is why, or into Sagittarius, which is why people are finding that they've got a new way of doing things, a new expansion of consciousness, but it is going to move backwards, back into Scorpio again, going retrograde, as of about the 22nd of April.
Well, while we're on the subject, a bunch of European... researchers have just said that the whole 12 signs of the zodiac thing is all wrong. There aren't 12. There are 13. They added one. And they also rearranged the dates so that most of us fall into new categories. Have you heard that news?
I had heard of it, but I mean, there have always been two separate astrological systems, one we called sidereal and the other one we called tropical. The sidereal system was the system that was specifically used by Hindu Vedic astrologers, which was based on the true positions of the stars. That, so the true positions of the stars are actually 23 degrees off where we use our regular astrology. Like, for example, your what sign are you, Art?
I'm a Gemini.
Okay, you being a Gemini, were you born late? When's your birthday?
June 17th.
So at June 17th, you would still be a Gemini because you would have to, because you're born late in June, because you would actually have to back your sign up 23 degrees, literally by some 23 days, and that's where you would find your astrological sign, because the Hindu Vedic charts are based on the true positions of the stars.
Well, a 23% error is not trivial. It's significant.
No, it's huge. But the thing is that both astrological systems work. If you're Hindu Vedic, for example, a Gemini is a person that's a master of communication, a person that maybe has a dual personality, multiple relationships in their life usually, but very, very talkative, best on television, best on radio, best on dealing with popular media. Now, if I was to move you back into, say, Taurus, the Hindu Vedic people basically attribute all the signs of Gemini onto Taurus. The Tauruses would be all those things. So you see, it all sort of changes. Both systems work.
I follow you. I want to get back to the phones.
Okay.
We've got so many people out there wanting to talk to you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean Morton. Hi.
Hi, this is Alan from Modesto.
Hi, well, Alan.
Hey, how's it going? I'm listening to you on KMH out of Fresno.
KMJ.
KMJ.
Right.
Hey, nice to have you loud and clear.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I do UFO investigations in this area, and I'm coming across a couple of new groups. One's called the Ashtar Command, and the other's the Solara. It has to do with the 1111. And they're claiming they can remove implants with psychic surgery. I'd like to know Sean's spin on this.
They can remove what?
implants using psychic
implants.
Surgery.
Psychic surgery.
These are supposedly the people that are abducted, that probes or tracking devices are actually placed sometimes down the throat, up the nose, in the ears. I don't know. I've heard of these people. It's not my job to say anything negative about people. I don't know how they can do it. I mean, the only success that I've seen with any of this. Well,
all right. Well, we can read between the lines.
Yeah, I don't. There's a lot of people out there who claim to be channeling, who are starting various religions based on this stuff. And all one can do is sort of be careful. The Astral Command has claimed a lot of different things over the years. I don't think any of which have happened.
All right, caller, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Well, good evening, Art.
Hi.
Fantastic show tonight, guys.
Where are you?
I'm calling. This is Security Steve calling from Albuquerque.
Yes.
I've got a couple quick questions. You got me on the edge of my seat tonight. Actually, first question is a two-part question. I'll make it quick. About you said about the Solstice Warning Net, how they're pretty much being taken out.
Yes.
Does that mean, do you think that might be a smoke screen at all?
Well, just as I said, I talked to, I've got a lot of family that's in the military. My uncle was an admiral in naval intelligence. My dad is a PR director for NASA. This fellow that called me last night, basically we were just sort of chatting about a couple of things, and he was just outraged at the fact that all of the cuts that the Clinton administration has made, when Clinton stands up and says, we've cut the size of government and cut personnel, he's saying, look, not a single bureaucrat's been fired. It's the fact that we're scaling down the military. We're taking whole battleships that we've spent billions of dollars on and just pouring cement down the cannons, we're sinking them to make reefs. They're talking about turning them into apartment buildings for the homeless. our entire submarine early warning net, which took us 25 years to build up, that had hundreds of people on it, that could track Soviet submarines, submarines all around the world, could track a submarine, send out a plane, drop a torpedo. This torpedo would then hunt it down and basically kill the prey. But this whole thing has been completely dismantled, and that most of the sensors have been turned off, and that now we've only got a handful, he said four guys, protecting both coasts of the United States, like two on the East Coast and two on the West Coast.
Essentially, only a shadow of what it once was.
Only a shadow of it, but the fact that we've signed the SALT I and SALT II agreements,
right,
have basically stated that it's like bad manners to defend cities in the United States from nuclear attack.
Political correctness.
Exactly.
And
we've basically stripped this. And the other thing he was raging about was that the Japanese just sold supposedly 40 decommissioned submarines as scrap to the North Koreans. And these are diesel boats. They do run on electric batteries. They can run much more silently than an atomic submarine can, underwater for some 10-odd days, and the North Koreans took bits and pieces from 40 of these submarines and actually got two of them to work.
Wonderful.
So now they've got two diesel subs.
The North Koreans who may have nuclear weapons.
Exactly, who have nuclear weapons, who have delivery systems, and he says that, and now, with a sub like this, they can sit 100 miles off the coast of New York and nuke New York and get away with it.
And which is one of your predictions. First time.
All right.
We got to go to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, sir. I had a question for Mr. Morton.
All right. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Oregon, Portland, Oregon.
All right.
Mr. Morton talked about the UFOs. And there's a lot of claim. I don't believe in it. But why are they coming to Earth? Why?
Well, I don't know. I've never met any myself. I've never asked them that question. All we can do is speculate. I mean, the whole field of UFO investigation is very much like a Zen cone. It ultimately doesn't make any sense. You ultimately run into black walls where you can all you can do is speculate what's on the other side of it. I mean, I could tell you my theory.
Go ahead.
And my theory is that I do believe that not only has the planet been visited since the beginning of recorded history, so this is not a recent thing at all. They've been reported in the Bible. In every ancient civilization has a very specific mythology based on this, but that there's the possibility that human beings themselves are a star-spanning race of beings, that we, in fact, come from other planets and other star systems and other solar systems and have traveled here through thousands of years and settled on this planet. It may be now that the Earth itself is a fascinating laboratory. If you look at it from what I believe to be an extraterrestrial point of view, and you look at the fact that on planet Earth, human beings live a very short period of time relative to their lifespans. Remember, human beings used to live 1,000 to about 1,500 years or so back in the bad old days in the Bible. Now we live to be about 100 or so, if we're lucky. We have very short lifespans. We breed very, very rapidly, and we mutate very favorably under a very harsh, very dirty radioactive sun. So we are the perfect laboratory for all of these species and beings to come from all over the universe to do experiments on. They pick people up, they'll do an experiment on the person, they'll put a probe on them, very much like a tracking device, like we put on an animal, put them back, see what their development is like, pick them up at a number of different points in their lives. Other people have put forward the theory that this one particular race of grays is at the end of a genetic breeding curve, and that they are crossbreeding their race with humanity. The abductees that I've interviewed and had close personal contact with claim that they're taken on board the ship and that they are shown dozens, sometimes hundreds of children that are crossbred between our race and theirs, because they claim that their race is in fact dying out. Now, as I said, these are speculations that are based primarily on what I believe to be first-hand contacts with these creatures, and all we can do is speculate. There is no proof.
I understand. I really like your characterization of us as beings sort of mutating out of control wildly under a dirty radioactive sun. That's an interesting perspective. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Mulkey in McChesney Park.
Where is
Illinois?
That? Illinois. All right.
I wanted to ask Sean if there was any one vision that he had about UFOs or anything that made him believe, I mean, one that stuck out more than all the other ones that made him believe that UFOs existed.
Well, the greatest thing for me was, I mean, I'd never seen anything like this before. I grew up with it when I was younger because my dad was a PR director at NASA. You know, Gordon Cooper was a good friend of ours. The astronauts would talk about things that they'd seen. And I'd never seen a UFO in my life until I went out to Area 51 in February of 1991, and we got within probably 500 yards of one of these devices bouncing between like 50 and about 250 feet off the ground, and we got within about 500 yards of this thing. And then I started going out to Area 51 and taking big gangs of people out there, and we'd all rent a bus, and we'd go camp out, and then I found the mountain peak that looks right down on the base, and of course from my efforts and a lot of efforts like Bob Lazar and George Knapp and some of the...
Okay, that's what you've done in the real world, but what he asked was, have you had any visions that relate to UFOs?
Oh, the visions of it? I thought he was talking about personal experience. One of the major visions that I've had about these, and this is very, very far off in the future, because it comes about the year 2034, was, and this is going to be wild. These are projections that I've had, visions that I've had.
All right, give it to us quickly, about 30 seconds.
That specifically what happens is that there is a one particular day in which there's chaos on the planet, where the planet has been knocked off its axis specifically by being struck by a meteor, and that all of the various ships and UFOs and motherships and what have you appear for one day. And it's called the Day of Appearance, and it's the day in which all of the calendars, in fact, start over, and we are finally shown that the lights go up in the audience, and this silly passion play that we've been playing on the stage that we call Earth, finally we see that we have an audience out there watching us, judging our actions and not being very pleased with what's going on.
All right, on that note, we'll pause, and it is the bottom of the hour. This, of course, is Dreamland, which means it's Sunday. I'm Art Bell.
From the Kingdom of Nye, this is Dreamland with Art Bell on the CBC Radio Network.
It is, and I'd like to wish you all good evening from the high desert, where it's a beautiful night, bright stars, and all the rest of that sort of stuff. I'm Art Bell. My guest is Sean David Morton, and he'll be back in just a moment with more. And I've got a fax here that I want him to... In fact, I'll read that right now so he can think about it. Sean, I'd like to know your opinion of the chance of UFOs being time travel craft from a technocratic future society where humans have moved underground to escape the environmental disasters and wars prophesized to be coming. I believe this explains, one, why they have not contacted us, and two, their knowledge of geologic formations. And so when he returns, an answer to that one. Fan of fire and watch it heat up well. adding oxygen.
Okay, now, with respect to this fax from Youngstown, Ohio, Sean, time travelers from the future?
Well, it specifically goes back to what I was saying before, is that this is what's so fun and so fascinating and yet ultimately frustrating about the entire field.
It's true.
Is that ultimately all UFO investigation is a Zen cone. It ultimately doesn't make sense. You're always led to that black wall in the maze where you can only speculate what's on the other side.
It is true. So it's as good a theory as any?
Yes. It's as good a theory as any. There has to be some explanation as to why they seem to be indigenous to this planet. I mean, they've been here for thousands of years. The argument that's used against ufology is that why would these beings come from light years away and basically do nothing but abduct people and you know, fly around our cities? Why don't they just grab a few people, take some rock samples, and go home?
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Where are you calling from, please?
Howdy. This is Jim. I'm calling from Milwaukee.
Hi, Jim.
I wanted to ask him if he had any predictions on Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson?
No, because, you know, whatever happens to Michael Jackson, I don't think has any real effect or bearing on the future of humanity. And the only reason I got into this in the first place was to specifically warn people about things that I saw coming up and eventually try to help people start establishing spiritual communities and spiritual brotherhood, so that they can be ready for a lot of these things when they happen.
All right. First-time caller line. You're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Yeah, how you doing, Art?
Okay, where are you?
My name is Jim. I'm calling from Fresno.
Okay, Jim, KMJ.
And how you doing, Sean?
Fine. Thanks, Jim.
I wanted to call about the paranormal occurrences happening. And I feel that the there are seven dimensions the Bible talks about. And I believe that the physical, which we're living now, is dimension one, and the astral world, which is the second dimension, is thinning.
Is the what? I'm sorry?
Is thinning. The veil between these two dimensions are thinning.
Yes. Yeah. I believe you're exactly right, and this has a lot to do with what we were talking about earlier, about how we're mentally moving out of four-dimensional space, height, width, breadth, and time, far more quickly into a fifth-dimensional aspect of mind, and a lot of the reason for this shift is the fact that we are very much becoming a global consciousness thanks to television, radio, fax machines. I mean, all of this technology that we have now, telecommunications, is in fact just kindergarten for the real telecommunications, which is in fact telepathy, the whole planet.
Maybe it's going along with the ozone, huh?
Yes, exactly. The whole planet all coming together. But yes, things are very much speeding up. Specifically because of consciousness, we're running out of time because time itself is getting shorter as our minds begin to expand and we take in more and more information.
All right, wild card line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hello, hi. My name is Carolyn. I'm calling from Seattle.
Yes, Carolyn.
And my question is, do you see anything happening in Seattle, like any earthquakes in 1995? And if so, how soon should a person should move? And what do you see is going to happen in St. Louis, Missouri? Is St. Louis and Denver, Colorado, a safe place to go from Seattle to St. Louis or Denver?
Okay. Specifically, what I've been talking about for quite some time is to watch for a series of earthquakes, very severe jolts at the base of Mount Rainier near Seattle, in the range of about a six. As I said, as high as a 6.5, but no bigger than a six, as a direct precursor to Mount Rainier, the exploding. The other thing is, too, is that, as we were stating before, volcanism is a pretty exact science, and there will be warnings and steam flumes and ways in which scientists can actually detect whether or not Mount Rainier is going to go. So it's not going to take anybody as any big surprise. Whether or not they'll actually evacuate sections of Seattle before they get the signal, I'm not sure. As far as St. Louis, Missouri goes, yes, you will have a great deal of problems with flooding in the Midwest this year, problems with dusters, tornadoes in the central part of the United States. I believe that after the quakes in California come later this year, I'm seeing the window being February, but larger quakes happening in October, you're going to have eventually the eruption of the New Madrid Fault, which runs generally through that area.
All right, John, we have been, I've just noticed, if you think about it a little bit, the people sitting back on the East Coast right now must feel very smug. We've talked about the Midwest now, the West Coast a very great deal, the Northwest a lot, even Alaska and Hawaii. What about the people back east?
Well, specifically, once again, the areas of Georgia are going to continue to experience a great deal of inundation. Florida, up along the coast, also the Carolinas are going to have very severe problems with storms and much, much larger hurricanes. After a series of quakes in California also, the continent itself is going to begin to flux back and forth. And New York has already had a series of quakes in the realm of like between 3.5 and about 4.5 in the upstate New York area. If New York gets hit with a quake of a 5 to 5.5 or so, you have to remember that the entire New York utility system is all built with wooden pipes that's very, very old and rotted. The specific things that I see happening as far as New York goes is I do see, once again, the atomic attack on New York in July of 1999, which is a linchpin of a large number of the Nostradamian prophecies, specifically a nuclear attack from a submarine by the Islamic Jihad. Now, the first attack is actually, the city is defended. It does manage to knock out a great deal of the electricity in that entire area with bombs that are exploding above land, in the sky, probably 30,000 to 50,000 feet up. Then areas of New York are going to be evacuated into New Jersey and into the Meadowlands. I do see as part of the final phase of the war, and the United States will not be that involved in the wars in Europe. We will be involved in the opening volleys of the wars there, and then we'll decide that it's none of our business, and we're basically going to leave the Europeans to hang out to dry. But I do see in late in the year 2001 a pair of chemical bombs exploding over both Washington, D.C. and New York that drop a snow-like substance. And now, both of these cities, I believe, will be relatively evacuated by that time. But I do see some sort of chemical warfare that takes place specifically because of this final conflict of the alliance with China, the various nations of Islam, Africa, and then Russia, NATO, and the United States.
All right. Well, I'm glad I asked. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hello. No, you're not. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hi, how are you all doing?
Okay.
Good, thanks.
Yeah, this is Bob Pepe Chico.
Hi,
yes.
Bob.
Yeah, Mr. Morton, got to mention Bible a couple of times, referring to UFOs. The only thing I've ever encountered in the Bible is the book of Ezekiel.
Ezekiel.
Ezekiel. Is that the one and only reference?
Well, it depends on how you interpret them. I mean, you know, throughout the Bible you have references to flaming tabernacles, the flying mountain of God, the wheels within wheels that Ezekiel speaks of, the chariots of fire that are spoken of in the book of Judges and Elijah. You're constantly having very tall, blonde-haired men who are either flying about in these flying chariots or actually visiting cities like Sodom and Gomorrah before entire cities are destroyed. You have the clouds that always seem to precede these, the thunderous music that sounds like trumpets, very, very much like modern-day UFO activity. It's my opinion that much of what you see in the Bible has a great deal to do with what appears to be extraterrestrial contact and visions and dreams and prophecies which are given to people in those days, basically talking about natural catastrophes, massive earthquakes, disasters, relating directly to the fact that unless people behave in a certain moral manner, in a certain way, directly obedient to the laws that are laid down in the first five books of the Old Testament, that your country is destroyed over a period of time.
All right, John, we have very little time. Let's see how many questions we can answer.
Well, let me just make one pitch here, Art, once again for the newsletter.
Sure.
For anybody that wants to subscribe to the newsletter, and I got such a huge response from your last show, it is the Delphi Associates newsletter. You can call me at 310-217-7579 if you need more information. That's 310-217-7579. What I will do for your listeners is that if you subscribe to the newsletter, it's $45 a year, For an extra $10, I'll send you 10 back issues of the newsletter. That basically just covers my printing costs. They retail for $5. Covers my printing costs, and that way everybody will get caught up. I'll send them from November, the October issues all the way on. And I got such a huge response with people signing up the last time that I wanted to give people a good deal. So once again, $45 for a one-year subscription. Add an extra $10 on, and I'll send you all the back issues. And
right.
You can mail that to, the address here is 2207 Hermosa Avenue. That's H-E-R-M-O-S-A, 2207 Hermosa Avenue, Hermosa Beach, California, 90254. 2207 Hermosa Avenue, Hermosa Beach, California, 90254, and it's $45 for a subscription. For $55, I'll send you 10 issues, back issues of the newsletter.
There you are. All right, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Yes, Art, Sean, this is Bryce in Wichita.
How you doing,
yeah,
Bryce?
Hi. The question, not so much on the future, Sean, but on the past. Like,
yes.
What do you know about, like, the occult forces prior to Nazi Germany and then Hitler utilized start his reign of terror?
Well, there's a couple of books on it that are pretty interesting. There's Morning of the Magicians by Jacques Rougier.
Uh-huh.
There's The
Spear of Destiny.
I'm sorry, The Spear of Destiny.
Yeah.
Which talks about the occult influences on Hitler. You know, it was a period or a time of antichrist, quite literally, of world leaders that were trying to centralize power. You can probably throw Stalin and Churchill and Tojo and FDR, you know, all sort of together in that aspect of these monoliths warring back and forth for control. I think you're going to see the same type of thing, the same things that made Nazi Germany possible are basically starting today with what's happening with the breakup of the Soviet Union, each one of those little republics becoming independent, allowing them to possibly be taken over one by one. Certainly the strife in Bosnia, which was a precursor to not only World War II, but also World War I as well. I think people, if you go back into our history, back in the 1890s, William McKinley, who was also who was elected in 1890, was shot by a Serbian, assassinated by a Serbian because the United States was involved in the Serbian conflict exactly the way we are now. So I don't know if that's...
Where do you see China? And I'll just hang up and listen.
All right.
Specifically, the role that China has to play in this is going to be that there are only two world power structures economically that are not aligned with the Rothschild-Rockefeller economic military-industrial complex, and those are China, specifically, and Islam. They are the only two, basically, power blocks left that are not into the interest-banking Western Rothschild-run system, and eventually the West and China and Islam must eventually come to blows because of the diametrically opposed economic systems of these two structures.
I have always believed that myself, Sean. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Hi.
Hi, this is Marianne in Kent, Washington.
Hi, Marianne.
Hi. I have a question.
Yes?
I'm right underneath Mount Rainier.
Yes.
And I felt the 5.0 earthquake.
Yes.
And I'm thinking of moving to Reno, Nevada. What do you think about that?
Good move or not, Sean?
No, I think Reno's good. As a matter of fact, even though there were some quakes, they had a substantial quake, a 6.0 in Gardnerville, which is just south of Tahoe. Reno is going to be a fabulous place. Colorado is going to be a good place. I mean, just to make it clear between myself and between many other people who talk about these coming earth changes, it is not my belief that Colorado is going to be the new west coast of the United States. I personally, in the visions that I have seen, simply flat out do not believe that's going to happen. As of 1996, there will be a series of quakes from 1996 until about 2005 that are going to quite specifically take out possibly between 5 and maybe 20 to 30 miles of coastline in California, with the two cities being the most damaged being San Francisco and San Diego,
mm-hmm.
with large chunks of California mm-hmm. literally breaking off and a fissure coming up along the San Andreas Fault between where the crotch point is between Baja and Mexico, along with volcanic activity in the Bahamas, specifically on the island of Martinique with the eruption of Mount Pelee, that is going to cause a landmass to begin to rise on the eastern part of the United States, which will submerge sections of, pretty substantial sections of Florida and big chunks of the East Coast. This leads to the economic crippling of the United States, and the United States turning in upon itself, where the U.S. will then break up into what I have seen as being 13 independent countries, with Canada and Mexico as part of what by 2005 will no longer be called the United States, but in fact the NAU, the North American Union. And the flag of the North American Union is actually the old revolutionary colonial flag. It's a yellow flag. It's called the Gaston flag, and it's got a serpent on it that says, "Don't tread on me." And that is going to be the new flag of what will be called the new states or the new North American Union. And when the economy of the federal government begins to collapse, due to the collapse of the Japanese economy, due to various natural catastrophes, you are going to see various states begin to secede from the Union. And it's going to be a foot race, and this is for your people in Alaska and Hawaii again, it will be a foot race between Texas, Montana, Alaska, and Hawaii as to who is going to be the first to secede.
Wow. I would have guessed certainly the same states. There are rumblings, of course, in all of those states, Sean.
Well, as we speak now, the Montanans, very noble people that they are in the process of putting a initiative on the ballot for Montana to secede from the Union based on Article 1, Section 3 of their state constitution that basically states that they feel the federal government is in violation of the Bill of Rights because of their... because of the crime bill.
Yes, all right. We have very little time. What response would you expect from the federal government, Sean, very quickly, should Montana or any other state secede?
Well, I think you're seeing, you'll see the same response there as you're seeing in Chechnya right now. We've got, we have U.S. Special Forces troops in Chechnya acting as advisors to the Russians that are basically doing the urban warfare with the Chechnya rebels. Those troops were trained here in the United States outside of Tucson, Arizona, and in Texas to do exactly what it is they're doing in Chechnya right now.
All right, my friend, we are out of time. Sean, we will do this again. It has always, as always, been a great pleasure having you on.
It's always a wonderful experience, Art. You're doing God's work, and I really appreciate it, and your fans appreciate it. I just hear nothing but great things about you from people who write me who just who say they just wouldn't know what was going on if it wasn't for you.
Thank you, my friend. And good night. Sean David Morton. And that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry, is all the time we have. I want to remind everybody, if you'd like to come to Hong Kong with us, that trip is just about booked. You must act now or it's going to be too late. Call 1-800-633-2732. That's the Hong Kong trip. May 13th at 1-800-633-2732. If you want a copy of this program, area code 503.
Order a copy of this program. Call 1-800-917-4278.
Everybody who helps with Dreamland, good night.
This has been Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped. Yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. Please join us again next week at this time for Dreamland.